You may have gathered that I want to talk a little bit about heaven. Every day when we pray, we say, art in heaven, but I don't have any pictures for you for all that, so the thing behind can go off, and you'll have to use your imagination. What is heaven like? What is heaven about? Why bother about it? Why even think about it when there's so much here and now to worry about? Am I looking forward to it? Are you? But first of all, a little bit of background. When I was 35, I looked in the Bible and found that I was scheduled to live for 70 years. And working out the score wasn't necessarily about football or about music or even about drugs. I worked out that I was halfway through at 35 out of 70. And then I thought, well, a fair bit of that 35 has been childhood and teenage, and I really wasn't an adult and a free person then, so I've only used up a very small fraction of my adult life, so I didn't worry about anything. When I was 50, the rules had changed. Due to the wonders of modern science, I was now scheduled to live to nearly 100, so I was still only halfway through. However, I had a wife, two teenagers and a mortgage, so I had too much on my plate even to worry about it at that stage. At the beginning of this month, I reached another milestone. No, it wasn't a birthday. Joan Beer has a birthday this week. Andrew Brown has a birthday around now. It wasn't a birthday, but I worked out that I was two-thirds gone. I'm 66.6 recurring. I can convert two-thirds into percentages because I once was a mathematician, although I often get sums wrong as in the street pastor's accounts on Friday. So I'm now entering my final third. So it's about time I thought about where I was going. Because the basic is, I'm going to die. Or to put it another way, I'm going to kick the bucket. I'm going to hang up my boots. I'm going to be past my sell-by date and taken off the shelf. I'm going to be 6 foot under. I'm going to be pushing up the daisies. I'm going to be a goner. In the word of the old sketches, I'm going to be an ex-parrot. So I hope you have the message now. I am going to die. When, I've no idea, nor how. It's quite likely to be by a heart attack, maybe within the next few minutes due to the stress of standing up here. It may be within 10 years or so. Personally, I prefer the second option. Maybe it will be long drawn out suffering for me with cancer. Maybe only long drawn out for those who are watching me when I've lost my mind. I have no idea how. I have no idea when, but I can be certain it will happen. So have you understood yet? Be with me. Have you understood the message? Can you agree? Just to make sure, can you all say together, Neil is going to die? Right. We got part one. But I've got good news for you. I'm not the only one. You're going to die too. There's a wonderful passage in Isaiah 40 which begins, comfort ye my people, says God. It's a form of prophecy. It's for all the people of Israel dumped in Babylon. Jerusalem's destroyed, all their hopes are gone, everything they built on is wiped out. They have nothing to believe in, nothing's left. They're sitting by the banks of the river with no hope, no future, no despair. Despair in their hearts, nothing to happen. And chapter 40 of Isaiah begins with God saying through the prophet, bring them comfort in their misery. But what comfort? Let's look at verse 6. It says, cry out. But they say, what shall I cry out? And he said, what shall I cry? What's the message of comfort? And then we have the answer. This isn't going to last forever. All flesh is grass, and all its loveliness is like the flowers of the field. The grass withers and the flower fades. Surely the people are like grass. the grass withers and the flower fades. There is comfort. There is good news. You are going to die. Difficult thing to take on board, isn't it? Do you think you could say that? It's easy to say it about somebody else, to say about people in general, but how about yourself? Can you say, I am going to die?
No.
Let's try it. All together. One, two, three. I am going to die. You don't have to sound so cheerful. Try with a bit more conviction. I am going to die. We don't talk about it. We don't shout about it. We keep quiet and pretend it's not going to happen. We ignore it. But it is going to happen. And for a Christian, it's good news, for heaven is a wonderful place. We spend our time here thinking of the future, but just the future here on earth. As I said, I'm then out in the final third, or on the old 70 and 10 model, I've only got 3 years left. To keep the football analogy, it's about time I thought what to do. Now I've got to the final third of the park. And so should you. It's all very well playing pretty games, passing it backwards and forwards. It's all very well getting lovely strategies for our lives, individual and as a church. But we really ought to be focusing on the purpose of it all. We're not playing to entertain the crowd. We're not playing to be recognised. We may be very good on the training ground. We may be very good on paper. We may be worth 50 million. But we are only good if we play to win. And that only happens when we reach the end of the park, when we score, when we die. We spend so much time thinking about somebody going to trip us up, the problems of life. We've met two horrible problems this morning. And saying it's not fair and asking the referee, but the manager is shouting at you to get on and move and work towards the end, because heaven is a wonderful place. Ask a teenager what he or she is going to do, and the answer is leave home, I'm going away. To university, to Bangor, to study psychology. Do you know what a university is? Have you been to Bangor? No. Where will you stay? Well, there are rooms in halls there, I think, but I might not have one. Anybody else you know going there? No. What psychology? Pass. Of course, I might not even get in. I might not get the grades. I might not be able to afford it. I may become ill. All sorts of things may stop my dream coming true. And it's a rather vague dream already. But that's what I'm fixed on. I see beyond the difficulties to the future. Or later, you see a girl who spends her time walking around with her hand up here because she's got a ring on her finger. I'm getting married. Don't know what it's going to be like. He's got a temporary job in Kidderminster and I'm working part-time in Slough. We don't have any money, we can't afford the wedding, we don't know where we're going to live, but we're getting married. That's what the idea is, that's where we're off to. We make our plans, which may or may not come to fruition. We look to the end goal and ignore the difficulties along the way. But we don't seem to face up to the one constant in life, namely death. Maybe it's because we're afraid of dying and don't raise our eyes beyond. But heaven is a wonderful place. We should sing and shout about it. Most men won't know this, unless you've done a bit of chemistry with litmus paper. But women sometimes disappear into a little room with some sort of gadget, and they come out and they flutter their eyelashes at you and smile and say, darling, I'm going to be sick. Darling, my tummy is going to look horrible. You won't be able to miss it. In 9 months, I'm going to scream blue murder and call you everything under the sun. Or so we learn from the TV channels. Surprisingly, that doesn't happen. They come up and say, I'm going to have a baby. Maybe all the other things happen. But we look beyond to something that is worth it. The joy, the prize. They're going to have a baby. Heaven is a wonderful place. If only we could lift our eyes beyond the gateway. Remember Jesus on the cross when he spoke to the guy who asked for his help? Jesus didn't say, don't fret. Jesus didn't say, don't worry, the palliative care centurion will be along in a little while and give you something to remove the pain. Jesus, in effect, said, hard luck, chum. You're really in for it. I'll be dead and gone long before you. You'll be standing here suffering, and they'll have to come back and break your legs, otherwise you'll be here for days. I'm not going to do anything to remove the pain, although I could get you down off this cross right now. Dying will be nasty for you, but look beyond the dying. This day you will be with me in paradise. Heaven is a wonderful place. We spend so much effort trying to deal with the current hurts on ourselves and our loved ones, we hardly ever look beyond the illness, the pain, the dying. And indeed, the rest of society has so little faith that often we are forbidden to give the reassurance that we know, as Christians, we can give. So why don't we think about it? One of the reasons I don't spend much time thinking about heaven is I don't know what it's like. And what I do here doesn't really appeal to me. What's your false idea of heaven? What's my false idea of heaven? Let's have some models. Is yours a retro heaven? Is your idea looking backward? Is it based on rosy tinted pictures of what life used to be, sitting on your mother's knee picture? Do you go with the old musical song, I like a nice cup of tea in the morning, to start the day, you see, and at 11:30, my idea of heaven is a nice cup of tea. Is it so mundane as that? Is it looking back to a rosy, comfortable picture of the past? In part, that's what the Jews were thinking of. They wanted the life that they had before restored, wanted to get back to the old ways. God isn't offering an old heaven. God is offering new. Is yours a glitzy heaven? Is it a picture of heaven based rather too literally on the passages from Revelation, speaking of heaven as a city, as a Jerusalem, the streets paved with glass, everything jeweled and dazzling? And do you think, I don't really want to be there? Christmas time I was out in the Middle East in one of those artificial glitzy places with buildings all covered in paving and glass and things. No indication of air conditioning and being environmentally friendly or anything like that. A bit like an empty film set with all the walkways smooth and paled and tiled, the curbstones being washed clean and painted every moment. Everything looking perfect, no heart to it. And many people will say they'd rather be in Wales, they'd rather see the green of the mountains, they'd rather the community here. They don't like a heaven which is like that. So sometimes when you see the biblical passages of heaven, do you think, it's not really me, is it? Is your idea of heaven a high-rise heaven? You remember the bit, in my Father's house are many rooms, that Jesus says in John's Gospel. And I know what Jesus is saying. In the context of his listeners, the guarantee that they had a roof over their head, an assured room, specifically for them, that they wouldn't be kept out, they would be allowed in, meant a lot to them. But I spent too many periods on business trips and conferences and meetings, and it sounds, a place with many rooms sounds too much like a Premier Inn to me. And so you've got your individual kind of cell, which is clean and hygienic and all mod cons, no doubt, where you get on the phone and have an automated voice which says, press one for more manna and two for the heavenly choir. I can't see that picture of heaven. Or perhaps yours is sort of more of a big top view of heaven. I know John tried to speak in Revelation of the glory of God and the picture of a king on his throne, but I feel that I will have had enough of kings on their throne after the royal wedding on the 29th. And I don't want to be in an extra at Westminster Abbey, and that is not my picture of heaven. Not, of course, that I'll be invited, but that's by the way. the thought of standing there with a little crown on my head, with angels flying everywhere and cherubim doing cartwheels across the stage, and a thousand voice choir coming bellowing out and deafening me so that I lose my orientation and fall over and drop my crown on the floor and have to scrabble after it and pick it up and do it all over again, not simply for half an hour but for eternity, is not my picture of heaven. So what is your picture of heaven? And more importantly, what are the facts about heaven? Because we so often ignore heaven. Why do we neglect it? I guess partly because the here and now blocks out the eternity. Just as the moon can block out the sun by an eclipse, something small and insignificant and dead and cold, but close to us, can get in the way of seeing something huge and powerful and life-giving. Secondly, of course, we are too comfortable. We are rich and healthy and happy and contented here. We don't need this comfort that God is offering. Comfort ye, my people. So most of the time, we are okay until we wake up to reality, and then it's too late, although we do complain. Sometimes we are thought to be peculiar if we think about heaven. We're thought to be so heavenly minded that we are no earthly use. So instead we become so earthly minded that we have no heavenly use. Because unless we are heavenly minded, we cannot be of use to God. So, some facts. First of all, heaven is not for everyone. Heaven is for anyone, but heaven is not for everyone. I mentioned Jesus talking to the thief on the cross. You remember that there were two thieves, one on each side. Jesus had nothing to say to the other one. The other one had nothing to do with Jesus and got nothing from him. Too many times I've been to a funeral when people have said, it's for the best. He's in a better place now. He's playing a heavenly round of golf or whatever it might be. And there's been no indication through his life that the deceased cared for Jesus, wanted to go to be with him. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. We don't know, we don't judge, we have nothing to say. But we cannot assume it will be okay for everyone. It is not the case. On Thursday, there's an election. Well, a referendum or something or other. We've got to vote anyway. I have a son who lives in Liverpool. And it's possible, unlikely, but possible he might pop over on Thursday and come to the door and say, how are you, Dad? And I say, fine. He says, I'll be with you in a moment. I've just got to go and vote. And he said, oh, that sounds interesting. I say this as our new likely conversation, but it's possible. So we then both go up to the parish hall and village where he's been born and brought up. And I go in and I cast my vote. Then he comes to the door and he's stopped. Why can't I go in? Aren't I good enough? I was born here, my son will say. I'm Welsh, not like my dad, who's English and a foreigner. I speak Welsh because I grew up here. Not like my dad, who's an English person, loud in here on sufferance. Why can't I do it? I'm better than him. There's no good standing there and complaining. He's not on the electoral roll, I am. I can vote, he can't. It may be unfair, it may be things that he will moan about. It's the situation. He cannot vote. Not because he's less worthy than me, just because he's not registered. Heaven is not for everyone. You have to sign up. Because people take it for granted that they are going to heaven when they're not. It's not for me to decide who goes. It's for God to decide. It's his rules. It's no good turning up at the door and saying, I don't like it. We ought to complain to the ombudsman. Things are different. I refuse to have anything to do with it. It ain't going to change anything at all. That's the way it is. God will take or he won't take. It's not for everyone. Secondly, heaven is God's home. So it's full of glory. We've been reading descriptions in Revelation of the glory of God. And there are pictures from John and other pictures in the Bible trying to explain the glory of God, which of course is beyond us to fully explain. But heaven is where God is. We say, Our Father, which art in heaven. In Isaiah 63:15, we read that he looked down from heaven, your dwelling place. We call out to God to look down from heaven. And of course, they're full of glory. They're made by God. Psalm 19, verse 1, the heavens declare the glory of God. Genesis 1, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And as we read, he will in due course create a new heaven. Heaven is where God is, and it is good and it is glorious. Heaven is God's home. We are going to God's house rather than him coming to ours. As Christians, we often preach about God coming into our lives. Open the door of my heart, Lord. As we plan for the church, we often ask God's blessing. Come in your spirit and help us, we cry. Heaven is a complete change. So no wonder we have difficulty grasping it or describing it, and don't often talk about it. We're not going to be playing at home, we're going to be playing away. We are going to his house, not ours. We are not in charge anymore. It's not our plans. We're not involved in it. We are going to his place. And we are going to be changed. Victor Hugo, the French novelist, wrote, I am the tadpole of an archangel. His theology was wrong, but the idea was right. We are tadpoles. We shall be changed. We will be made to fit into heaven, not the other way round. We are in danger of concentrating on trying to build heaven on earth, rather than preparing ourselves to change from earth to heaven. Perhaps we should concentrate more on that rather than on making life better for the tadpoles. Because Christ can give us peace of mind, yes. Give us a better marriage, yes. Heal our hurts, yes. And so can others. But Christ can bring us into God's glory forever. And no one else can. Thirdly, heaven is Jesus' home. So heaven is full of grace. Heaven is where Jesus is. Many of the pictures of heaven in Revelation depict Jesus in heaven as the Lamb on the throne. Yes, we see Jesus as risen. Yes, we see Jesus as crowned. Yes, we see Jesus as receiving praise. But in heaven, we see Jesus as the Lamb. The slain one, the crucified one, the one that we remember through the communion. Heaven continually shows the grace, the undeserved favor of God to us, emphasizes that Jesus is that expression of the love and grace to us of God. And heaven is where we shall meet Jesus. It is where we shall see him. And not through a glass darkly, but face to face. We shall see God in all the fullness that we can understand. In 1 Corinthians 2, there's the passage, Eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor have entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for those that love him. And we can sometimes think, well, if we haven't thought about it, we haven't seen it, we can't understand it, why bother about it? That heaven is beyond us. But the passage goes on, but God has revealed them to us by his Spirit. Now, and in verse 12 it goes on further, now we may know the things that have been freely given to us by God. Heaven is where we shall be. In faith we know now. In heaven we shall know completely. And finally, heaven is where the redeemed are. Heaven is where those that accept the saving grace of Jesus are, regardless of how good or bad they may happen to be. Those that, as I said, have signed up, those that have accepted, those that have agreed. Any talk of heaven in the Bible, as in the passage we saw earlier, leads to an outpouring of praise and adoration and sheer joy at the wonder of the work of God. Heaven is God's home, so it must be joyful. Psalm 16 says, in your presence is fullness of joy. And heaven is where we go to be in the presence of God.